I'm Lester Holt. Tonight on Dateline, an exotic pet dealer found dead, leaving investigators to unravel a venomous mystery.
Oh, God.
What happened?
Oh, God. I went to go check on him. He saw him on the ground.
I had a little snake. He raised a large 500-pound snake.
We were told it was a snake attack.
I'm going to kill him. We'll see it.
To me, it did not seem like a snake injury at all.
This was not an accident. Ben was shot 8 times.
Why would someone want to kill Ben?
Everyone thought it was his brother.
Did Lindley say what the brothers were fighting about?
The farm. Money.
They were having marital problems.
Finding out that she was in another relationship so soon after the murder was a big red flag.
He was toxic. She was afraid of him.
His texts to her were awful, evil.
I just broke down. It can't be real.
I believe that the truth will come out, and trust me, this is not the truth.
Some people might say this beautiful piece of property is cursed.
There's a lot of history out there. It's not all pretty.
Here's Andrea Canning with Venom.
It was a warm June evening in 2017, just before dusk, down a long road in rural Missouri. Out here, it was desolate, isolated, about an hour outside of bustling St. Louis, but a world away. This family farm was once a place of happy memories, with plenty of room to raise kids and let them roam. And on this evening, like so many others, all was quiet, still. Then came the call.
911, what's the address? Emergency.
There's blood everywhere.
All that came through were desperate cries, confusion.
Okay, I'm sorry, what'd you say?
My husband's on the ground and there's blood everywhere.
The woman managed to tell the dispatcher she'd come home to find her husband in a pool of blood.
Do you know what happened to him?
No.
Dee Wassman was an EMT on duty in Montgomery County that night.
Where are you when this call comes in?
We were at the ambulance base. They were teaching EMT classes.
Dee and her partner jumped in the ambulance and asked questions as they raced to the scene.
So we asked for additional information. Was he conscious? Did he have a pulse? Respirations? Had CPR been started?
The 911 dispatcher still couldn't get much from the woman on the line.
Okay, is he conscious right now or breathing?
I don't know, my brother-in-law just went inside.
A minute later, the woman's brother-in-law got on the line.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, we've got everybody on the way. Do you know what happened?
No. It had a little snake. Lindley, I don't know where the snake is. Oh, my God.
Hear that? A snake. Apparently on the loose.
While we were en route, it came across that they believed a 600-pound anaconda had caused this damage. Very unique call.
Yeah, I mean, have you ever heard anything like that
before? No, I had never heard anything like that.
Dee and her partner flew down the dusty driveway toward the property. A 72-acre farm with several homes and buildings.
You arrive on the scene, lights are flashing, you guys are in a huge hurry. What do you see as you're pulling up?
Multiple deputies out, guns drawn, ready to go into this building, but they're still afraid to go in because they think there's a 600-pound snake on the loose.
Deputies from the Montgomery County Sheriff's Department had arrived there first. Their body cameras rolled.
There's a big old snake on the loose.
Yeah, I'm not good with that. I'm not scared of snakes, but I'm scared of this one.
The deputies located the victim's wife, who had called 911.
The whole building's full of snakes.
I understand you have an anaconda. Where's it at? I know it's difficult right now, but we need to make sure nobody else gets hurt.
It's down in the basement.
And I was not aware it was a snake facility, but my partner was, because he was local to the area.
Some of the deputies also knew this farm was home to more than 2,000 snakes housed in a facility on the property. And they knew who it belonged to. Ben Rennick, a world-renowned snake breeder.
So I learn it's a snake farm, and here's all of these country guys that are terrified of snakes. I had been raised with a snake. I wasn't afraid of a snake. So they've all got out shotguns and they're ready to just start blasting at a snake if it comes at him. Like, come on, guys.
The police.
Yes, the police. It's a 600-pound snake. You're going to see it coming.
So Dee went inside, only to find she was too late.
It was obvious he was gone.
There was no helping Ben Renick. Dee thought he'd been dead at least a few hours. It fell to Dee to give his wife Lindley the news.
Once there was no life, and I went to her and told her that he was dead.
What was her reaction to getting that news?
It was guttural. She was devastated. She acted like her life was completely over. She was completely devastated, worried about her children, how they were going to survive without their father. She looked so weak.
Were you trying to console her?
Of course.
Deputies still had a dangerous suspect to track down, the massive missing anaconda.
Harley, you see a snake come out of here? You better shoot that bitch.
I got him.
Row after row, the building was filled to the brim with reptiles of every size.
What are they doing with
this thing? They sell them. It's like a little shop.
Deputies cautiously made their way through the facility, all too aware that this snake could be a killer.
Fellas, something got him. Paramedics said there's a bite mark on him, so there's a snake loose in here.
Uh-huh.
So watch your ass.
This was a death scene no one had encountered before.
Do we have anybody we could call to deal with an anaconda?
I'm going to kill it. We see it.
Something sinister had slithered into Ben Renick's life, but just what? Deputies couldn't be sure. One thing was for certain, the hunt was on.
The hunt underway for a lethal reptile. But when we come back...
To me, it did not seem like a snake injury at all.
Loved ones rattled by disturbing news.
The coroner let me know that this was not an accident.
This family farm in New Florence, Missouri had gone from calm to chaos.
I'm gonna kill it. We see it.
Ben Renick had just been found dead. His big brother Sam had come running when Ben's wife Lindley called him to help. It was Sam who first alerted authorities about the snake on the 911 call.
Could you see what the nature of the injury was?
His skull was crushed, so I didn't know what to think. My first thought was, of course, the snake.
Sheriff's deputies combed the area with guns at the ready. They were hunting for a possible slithering perp. An EMT spoke to Lindley's father, Lyndall Gallatin, that night.
She said, Mr. Gallatin, Mr. Renick has passed away, and they don't know whether it was a snake.
Family friend Bobette Tucker also heard about the snake as she raced to the property that night.
They had said that Ben had died, and they think that it was a snake.
Oh my gosh, what are you thinking when you hear snake?
How could this happen?
Babette had known Ben for decades. Her son was Ben's best friend.
How do you think it shaped Ben and your son Cody, his best friend, growing up in such a small town? I mean, 2,800 people.
Yeah, I think that it gives them a good moral compass. People know them, you know, and they know their families.
Ben had loved animals even as a child, which wasn't a surprise to his parents since they owned a thriving pet food company. He particularly liked exotic reptiles, lizards, turtles, and snakes.
Your parents actually encouraged exotic animals?
They did. We were encouraged to have exotic pets as kids, and Ben had a variety of unique pets at a young age.
The Renick sprawling farm was the perfect place for Ben, Sam, and Babette's son to run wild, secluded in a world all their own.
Was it the kind of place the boys would run around and discover nature or maybe their ATVs, I don't know, that kind of thing?
There was a little pond out there. The boys were in the woods all the time. I mean, Sam will tell you that they've got buried treasures out there.
Did you become really close because of the location of your farm? And
we did, yeah. We did everything together for the longest time.
Ben was also a talented drummer. In his early 20s, he played in a local metal band that would change his life. Through the band, he met a special woman.
What did he tell you about her?
He told me that he'd met someone and that they had a lot in common, and he was head over heels for Lindley.
Lindley was from a small town just down the road from the Rennecks, a single mom raising her young son.
Lindley was very sweet. She was perfect for Ben. She was very outgoing, bubbly. She was everything that Ben ever wanted.
Lindell says the couple was a perfect fit.
Were you really happy that Lindley had found Ben?
Yes. They seemed like a great couple together, and I liked Ben a lot. He was really easy to get along with. Yeah, I was very happy.
The whirlwind romance turned into an instant family. The two got married and had a daughter.
Could you see them moving really fast, that these two were really into each other?
Yeah, we did. I too, was a mom, a single mom. And when you have children, you're going to look for something serious.
Yeah.
And Ben took them both in, and they seemed to get along. They had mutual likes. I mean, you either like snakes or you don't.
With a growing family, Ben left his music career behind and turned his passion for reptiles into a budding business.
But hopefully this girl will be good to go in another year or two.
Did you think that love of reptiles, he would parlay it into an actual career?
No, I didn't expect that whatsoever. He did a good job at it. He was very focused.
We are at the beginning of our hatching season.
Lindell says breeding and selling snakes was a lot of work, but Lindley didn't mind.
Why do you think Lindley was okay with that? Not every woman would be.
She loved animals. She loved taking care of things. She was just a compassionate person.
We do breed smaller females in this.
Ben operated out of this large facility on the family farm and made videos for his YouTube channel under the name Rennick Reptiles.
In this video, we are going to show you how we ship all of our reptiles.
Now, Ben was dead in the very place his business came to life. Back at the scene, the chaos had only escalated as deputies tried to figure out how a snake might have killed him. Remember, they were on high alert after someone noted a possible snake bite on Ben's arm. But Sam said Ben didn't deal with poisonous snakes.
Well, even a small snake, if it's really toxic, they supposedly didn't have any poisonous ones. That's my understanding.
That didn't mean Ben's snakes couldn't kill. Perhaps, like Sam first thought, one of the large snakes had crushed Ben's skull, like the reticulated python or the anaconda, not your everyday house pets.
How big were Ben's snakes?
At the time, I think his biggest one was 12 feet. Now that I have her, it's been a couple years and she's a little bit bigger. This here is a male green anaconda.
Wow.
His name is Blue.
Megan Kelly, or as her followers know her, Megaconda, is an anaconda breeder and friend of Ben's.
What is the most likely scenario if a snake were to kill someone?
It would be by strangulation. It would be purely like an accident. It'd either have to get around your neck or like kind of crush your, like your ribs, like your lungs.
You could see how someone would think that Ben might have been killed by one of his snakes. When you get up close, it's very powerful.
But as powerful as these snakes are, experts like Megan found it hard to believe that someone with Ben's experience would end up the victim of an attack.
Yeah, they're very powerful snakes, but like I said, it comes with experience and like knowing like what you're doing with them, and like Ben was very experienced.
On the scene that night, EMT Dee Wassman was thinking the same thing. Remember, she'd grown up with snakes.
Could you tell if this indeed was a snake injury?
To me, it did not seem like a snake injury at all.
Lindley told the police that, too.
That snake wouldn't do that.
Dee and Lindley were right. The coroner finished his examination and shared some very big news. A snake wasn't, in fact, to blame.
The coroner let me know that this was not an accident, that this was not a snake attack, and that someone had hurt Ben.
Ben had been shot, murdered. Amidst the frenzy of the snake hunt and the chaos at the scene, somehow the bullet holes had been missed.
How many times was Ben shot?
Ben was shot 8 times.
Now it was clear there was no missing snake at all. The case suddenly went from reptile hunt to homicide. Ben was a beloved father, husband, and animal lover. If it wasn't a cold-blooded snake, who was cold-hearted enough to kill him? It was time for investigators to talk to Ben's inner circle.
Coming up, friends utterly mystified.
I thought it was crazy. He was like the nicest person. He never seemed to have an issue with anyone.
But there was something that troubled Lindley the day of the murder.
Obviously, I got a little more worried. Just kind of gave me a bad feeling.
When Dateline continues.
29-year-old Ben Renick's death had been ruled a homicide, and the crime was brutal. The snake breeder had been shot 8 times. Family friend Bobette Tucker found the news that Ben had been murdered nearly impossible to process.
What was really going on here?
Yes, yeah. And of course, who would shoot Ben?
That shock reverberated through the large community of people who knew and loved Ben, including those in the reptile industry, like Ben's friend and anaconda breeder, Megan Kelly.
What is going through your mind when you hear that Ben, who everyone liked, had been shot?
I thought it was crazy. Like, he clearly did not deserve it. He was, like, the nicest person, always happy to help. Like, he never seemed to have an issue with anyone. So it was just kind of shocking to hear that he'd been shot.
The Missouri Highway Patrol arrived to take the lead in the investigation. Lindley Renick was the first to find Ben in the snake facility, and investigators needed to talk with her to build a timeline of the day.
I know you've talked to a handful of other people today about how your day went, but if you want to go ahead and walk us through it some.
Just like from the beginning or from...
Say from this afternoon.
Lindley told investigators she'd been at work that day at the spa she owned in Columbia, Missouri, about a 45-minute drive from the farm.
You mentioned that you did speak with Benjamin before you left from work. What time was the last time you spoke?
It was 3:45. You said you're still good for kids tonight, or do I need to? And I said, I need you to. I'm not going to be able to leave right now.
On her way home, the phone rang. It was the school. The kids had not been picked up that afternoon.
And so I got a call from them. So I was like, okay, well, I'm on my way. I'm so sorry. I'm just looking at them. And then I tried to call Ben in the facility a couple times and send him some messages.
Ben wasn't responding.
Obviously, I got a little more worried, but it's like, okay, well, 1,000 things could be why he's not answering. And then I got home and I told the kiddos to stay in the car since he wasn't answering. He's never forgotten them, so it just kind of gave me a bad feeling.
Then Lindley repeated the story she told first responders.
I saw him laying on the ground and there was a lot of blood. And so I ran outside and I called Sam. So I just told him he needed to get to the facility right now. And then I got off the phone with him and I called 911.
She still seemed to be in shock.
Do you have any questions for us?
What happened?
We don't know yet.
What do I do?
Lean on your friends and family.
But any homicide investigator will tell you, the spouse always gets a cold, hard look. Friends and family, however, felt certain that looking at Lindley would be a dead end.
Did you think, you know, it could be the spouse?
No.
Which would be Lindley?
No. No. That never crossed our mind, ever. Mm-mm.
Why not?
She loved him. I mean, there was nothing that would give us pause to think that it was ever Lindley.
Proof of that love? Her commitment to Ben and his snakes. She even helped him travel across the country to reptile shows. Former NFL linebacker Chad Brown is a successful reptile breeder and owner of a reptile shipping company in Denver. He got to know Ben on the reptile show circuit.
I get to know Lindley because Ben brings her to the shows. In the reptile hobby, there's some spouses who are full participants. That makes up a very small minority. So whenever you see a couple who's at the shows, you kind of take note of that. And then she was more than just a tag-along. She was part of the team.
Lindley was Ben's right-hand woman in his thriving snake business. She spent long days working with him at the snake facility and helping him build an online presence for Renick Reptiles.
So here Ben is going to show you essentially what we do from the moment that they hatch out of the eggs.
Everyone in the snake industry seemed to admire the couple's obvious synergy.
Ben was a good dude. And then the fact that it was Ben and Lindley. And I've always got a heart for folks who are entrepreneurial, who are trying to build something.
After the couple's success with Renick Reptiles, Lindley wanted to try a business venture all her own. She took her former training as a massage therapist and with Ben's help opened that spa in Columbia.
That's a big step.
Oh, wow. They put a lot of money into this spa. And it was top of the line. It was beautiful. They both spent a lot of time there getting it ready. She did a great job.
Back in the interview room, Lindley told investigators how much she admired Ben as a hardworking businessman and father.
Ben's just so, he just makes everything okay.
And while Ben and Lindley seemed to have the perfect little family, she had a lot to say about someone very close to Ben.
Was there any family issues?
Between Sam and,
Investigators would soon learn the brothers had a history that read like a tragic novel.
Coming up, a bizarre account of Sam's behavior at the murder scene.
He was saying, that's right, I'm the brother murderer.
The brother murderer. What did that mean?
Police had been asking Lindley Renick to relive every detail of that horrible day, the day she'd found her husband murdered on the family farm. Investigators knew how Ben was killed, but as for the why, they asked for Lindley's help.
Do you have any thoughts or ideas, or do you know what happened tonight?
I don't.
The more Lindley talked, the more a story emerged. It was about Ben's brother Sam and the farm.
Ben and I actually own all of the property. Sam kind of basically just went to Ben and he was like, you need to give me half of the property. Ben was like, no, I'm not going to give you half of the property.
Investigators learned the brothers were feuding over the Renick land, a property with a long and tragic history.
Welcome to the Renick household.
Their parents, Frank and Kim Renick, bought the farm in the 80s and raised their young family miles from the nearest town or grocery store.
Was it kind of a sanctuary?
It was their sanctuary. It really was.
From the beginning, the Renicks had their own way of doing things, and the family farm was at the center of it all.
They did everything big. They didn't buy a bottle, they bought a case.
But a shadow of hardship seemed to follow them. In 1992, the family's newly built house was destroyed in a suspected gas explosion.
Leaving Sam's room, going into Ben's room.
They rebounded, though, and replaced it with a 10,000-square-foot home, complete with a pool and diving board.
Was it nice?
Oh, yeah, it was beautiful. Yeah, Kim did a fabulous job, interior decorating and stuff. It was beautiful.
But their piece of paradise couldn't escape another tragedy. Ben and Sam's mom, Kim, was diagnosed with cancer.
It just became a part of their life, because she managed with it a long time.
In 2008, after 15 years of living with cancer, Kim died in her bedroom in that beautiful house.
After fighting so hard for so long, it must have been just so devastating.
She was the strongest woman I'll ever know for what she went through.
The boy's dad, Frank, seemed to crumble without their mom.
She was Frank's rock. Aside from his kids, Kim was his solid. And when she passed away, he lost a big part of his life and changes a person.
Ben and Sam wouldn't understand those changes until years later.
Frank sadly took his own life.
Yes, Father's Day.
Oh, on Father's Day?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, just like one tragedy after the next.
Yeah, Ben found him.
The series of tragedies left the Renick sons sudden landowners of the family's massive property. They were only in their 20s.
What happened to the land and the boys? Did they take it over?
Yeah, Frank had things set up for them not to lose the farm. The farm was also, that was their legacy as well. And it meant everything to them.
Would you say that everything that happened really strengthened the bond between Ben and Sam?
Oh, yeah.
But Lindley told police that dealing with the farm and their inheritance had been tearing the brothers apart. Part of the reason was the financial agreement they'd worked out after their father died. The mortgage was put in Ben's name, and Sam paid him rent. Lindley said Sam wanted to change that.
So Sam and his wife were married at that time, but no kids. And so they moved into that house, and they were talking to us about buying half of the property from us, and then they would have that house. But that never ended up happening.
That's when Lindley said Sam asked Ben to give him half of the property, and Ben refused.
Then they were like, well, we can't afford to live out here. We're going to have to move.
Lindley said she tried to intervene.
And so I sent Sam a message like, I don't think you understand how much that really hurt Ben.
But she said it was too late.
His wife sent Ben and I a message that was basically just kind of like, f*** you. And there for a while, Sam and I were like, I wanted absolutely nothing to do with him.
Sam was on the property when Lindley found Ben, so police dug deeper. Had the brothers' feud fueled and enraged Sam to kill Ben?
What is Sam's demeanor like in general?
I mean, he has kind of a depressed personality. He's overly dramatic. And he's just so different than Ben. He's a lot more in your face.
First responder Dee Wassman remembered Sam complained about his brother at the crime scene.
He's cheap. Problems. Wouldn't hire any help.
They were just very off-color remarks to be being made on a scene.
What else was he saying?
He was saying, that's right, I'm the brother murderer.
Brother murderer? What did that mean?
Was there anything in your gut saying, just with Sam's behavior that night, that he could be involved in this?
He was who I originally thought did it.
Did you start to wonder about Sam, question Sam?
How can you not? We didn't want to believe that he could do this to his one and only family, living family member, aside from his own children. I mean, this is his brother. But you still have this question. It was a crime of passion.
Investigators had a lot of questions for Ben's big brother. Questions that were about to be answered.
Coming up, Sam admits to tensions with Ben.
Ben and I aren't close. Maybe this isn't... hang out at the top, really. Even though we live next door to each other.
One conflict, sharing the family farm.
It's complicated.
When Dateline continues.
Rumors about Ben Renick's death started to ripple through the reptile community. His friend Megan Kelly heard a story about who might have wanted Ben dead.
At first, everyone kind of thought it was his brother over just like jealousy of something. But that was like the first rumor that was kind of like going around.
That Sam killed Ben.
Yeah.
Lindley's dad even heard the chatter about Sam.
What did you make of the rumors that were going around that Sam killed Ben?
I didn't know exactly what to make of them. Ben and Sam were not as close as what a lot of people are led to believe.
Sam.
Police brought Sam down to the station and asked him about what he'd done and where he'd been on the day Ben was murdered.
When do you usually get off work? At 5, I'm not. Got off work, picked up babies, took the kids back to the farm.
Sam lived in his parents' big house on the farm. He told investigators he was home by 6 because he had an appointment. He was interviewing a new babysitter. But only minutes into that interview, it was interrupted by a phone call.
Lindley calls, screaming.
Screaming because she just found her husband dead. Sam said he was devastated by the loss, but he admitted he didn't always get along with his brother.
Ben and I aren't close. Ben and I don't have a lot in common. Ben doesn't drink. He's real serious. He doesn't have any fun at all. He doesn't leave the farm much. I'm the opposite of Ben in almost every way. I have a lot of fun, and maybe this didn't hang out at the top, really, even though we lived next door to each other.
Sam said one reason he didn't talk much to Ben, his brother could be arrogant.
I know he's top of his fields. He liked to brag a lot. He's always. That's one of the reasons I didn't like hanging around Ben. He's always talking about money. How much money he made this day, how much he's making on that transaction.
Money seemed to be a source of contention for the brothers. Sam admitted the terms of their inheritance made things complicated.
Ben got ownership of the land. I got most of the money. Ben couldn't afford the land, not the money. So we had to work together to make it happen. Complicated.
How'd y'all do that?
It's a good question. I don't know if we really did.
The farm was also a money pit, Sam said, which is why he was planning to leave.
We were moving from the farm because I can't afford the farm. That's an expensive place to live. The house I'm staying at, the big main house on the left out there, is falling apart. It needs $50,000 put in there. I'm spending more than I'm making. I'm taking money from the treasurer every month. I can't afford to live there.
Sam, Ben, and Lindley appeared to be in a bad place before the murder, and it seemed like the police were starting to wonder if Sam had something to do with Ben's death.
Now's the time to get ahead of anything. No, I hear what you're saying, but I don't have anything to tell you, and I wish I did. Because I don't have the first idea.
Sam, did you have anything to do with the death,
though? No.
Anything at all?
No. I can't imagine it. No. The answer is no. I'm wrapping my mind around all of this now, but I know you're going to ask me certain questions. I have no idea what happened to my brother.
Sam maintained his innocence, but police challenged him to prove it.
Are you willing to submit to a shotgun or not shotgun, a gunshot residue?
Yeah, anything you want. Yeah.
Okay. We'll do that. Are you willing to...
DNA, whatever you want, it's yours.
Turn over your phone?
For how long?
It'll be overnight, about a day.
Oh, that's fine, yeah.
You willing to do that?
Whatever I can do to help up Ben, I'm all for it.
Sam promised to take a polygraph and make himself available to police, and they let him leave the station. But in the days after the murder, Sam's behavior would seem to turn hostile.
Coming up, alarm at the farm.
I blocked the road and I put a sign up that said I'm drunk and I'm armed.
And then, could Ben's business have provided a motive for murder?
Was it a disgruntled customer? Was it a disgruntled employee? Was it a rival where a deal went wrong?
Sam Renick had spent hours with police at the crime scene and down at the station.
I'm not going anywhere. If you guys need me, I'm 100% available. Like I said, I'm on the book.
He seemed entirely cooperative. But shortly after, he put up a threatening sign near the farm warning would-be visitors to stay away.
I did something stupid. I blocked the road and I put a sign up that said I'm drunk and I'm armed. And
whoa, why?
Well, I didn't want any company at that point in time. I didn't know, you know, who could have been done something like that or who could be out there.
Did you worry that people might take that as that you were guilty, that this was, you know, you're acting irrational, that maybe you were capable of murder?
I don't know if that was all that irrational for me at that point in time or not. No, I wasn't concerned about that.
Sam told us he was simply a man struggling to make sense of his brother's death, and says that even explains his bizarre behavior at the crime scene right after Ben's murder. Remember EMT D. Wassman said he called his brother cheap and called himself a brother murderer, something Sam doesn't remember saying.
There was some talk that you were acting strange. Anything you want to say about that?
How does one act after they lose their last family member? You know, I had a hard time. After everything that we've been through, losing Ben was devastating.
Sam says he passed his polygraph and remained cooperative with police, but he understood why they would need to look at him.
Was there thought that there could be a motive there for you with the financial interests of the farm?
Well, I'm sure the finances came into it along with the investigation, and if they were looking for motive, we had, you know, Ben and my finances were intertwined, you know, quite a bit, especially with the property.
Do you think the police had to look into that, though, and take it seriously?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that they did look into that.
Sam told us he never demanded half of the property from Ben. They had already come up with an informal agreement to split up the farm.
We had always planned to have the property divided. That's the way that my father and mother had asked us to do it, and that's definitely something Ben had planned to do.
This was a temporary situation.
Exactly.
And whatever ups and downs the brothers might have had, Sam says he never harmed Ben.
Did you have anything to do with the murder of your brother?
Absolutely not.
But if Sam didn't kill Ben, then who did?
We had problems with people out there looting the place.
Sam had given police his own theories on the case. For starters, he thought maybe this could be a burglary gone bad.
He didn't lock the doors. He didn't lock the doors or anything.
Sam told police Ben was robbed a couple of years earlier at his house on the farm and $6,000 in cash was taken. But that kind of money would have been nothing to Ben compared to the scaly valuables he had on the property, his collection of snakes. Ben's reptiles were sought after.
How big of a player was Ben in the business at this point?
Ben was at the cutting edge of producing new and interesting morph animals. His ability to combine different genes to create, you know, new, brand new, fascinating animals. He was at the cutting edge of that, towards the top.
Chad Brown, Ben's friend and fellow snake breeder, says over the past decade, the industry has become very popular and very lucrative. Ben owned some incredibly rare snakes, like this T-positive albino anaconda, apparently the only one in the world. A snake like that could fetch as much as $100,000.
I tried to think, you know, there have been some beefs in the reptile world. Maybe somebody feels they got the wrong end of a deal or something like that. Could Ben have had some beef with somebody? What could have possibly been the cause or origin of this, you know, his death? And Ben seemed to get along with everybody. He didn't have those kind of reptile beefs that I've heard about with other breeders.
But maybe there could have been a rival that you didn't know about, or a disgruntled customer.
Yeah, was it a disgruntled customer? Was it a disgruntled employee? Was it a rival where a deal went wrong or somebody was jealous of Ben's collection?
But was Ben actually looking to leave his beloved business altogether? Lindley told investigators he was in the process of selling his whole collection to NHL goalie Robin Lehner, who was trying to break into the reptile industry. The two had even talked money, and Ben priced his business at over $1 million.
Ben valued everything at 1.9, and then they settled on 1.2.
There was one other theory surrounding Ben's death that also involved money, and another difficult chapter in the Renick family's story. Right before his suicide, Sam and Ben's dad, Frank, was indicted on 3 federal counts of mail fraud. Remember, Frank ran what seemed like a successful pet food company. But the government alleged that behind the scenes, Frank was taking millions from investors with no intention of paying them back. He faced 20 years in prison. He shot himself before the case could go to trial, leaving his children parentless and his investors upset.
Did you think this could be related to your dad's business, even though that was so long ago,
that
just unfinished business?
That definitely crossed our mind. You know, we definitely thought that that was a possibility.
Investigators couldn't find a link between Frank's past and Ben's murder. And if the killer wasn't Ben's brother, Sam, or a rival from the reptile world, then who could it be? Police kept working to find the answer. And meanwhile, whispers around town were that Lindley wasn't exactly acting like a grieving widow.
Coming up, a possible clue unearthed at the scene.
There was a part of me that was kind of excited, like, you know, what if this is something?
Then Lindley meets a new man, and
she has some news.
She was pregnant.
Is this feeling a little premature to you?
It was a surprise.
When Dateline continues.
If investigators had a prime suspect in the Ben Renick murder case, they weren't sharing that information with his loved ones.
We would question, what's going on with that? You know, is there any suspects? You know, well, yeah, there is, but, you know, can't talk about it.
As for Lindley, the young widow was now busy raising her 2 children as a single mom. It left little time to focus on Ben's enormous snake collection. So Lindley called a professional. This man.
Do you go by David or Dave?
Dealer's choice.
David Levinson was good friends with Ben. They'd become close on the reptile show circuit. He admired Ben and the magic he worked breeding his snakes.
He was putting animals together and creating colors that nobody had seen before, a lot of first-time things in the industry.
His name was really
very well known.
Getting around that he was the guy.
Worldwide, yes.
So when Lindley reached out to David about Ben's one-of-a-kind creations, he didn't hesitate.
You're on a flight to Missouri to help with the collection.
Essentially, anything I could help with. Just headed right out there when I had the first chance.
David put his own life on hold and took charge. For weeks, he fed the snakes and cleaned their cages, all in the same facility where his friend was shot 8 times. David says it was the least he could do. Lindley was in no condition to go back into that building.
Was Lindley really struggling?
She was extremely emotional when I got there. A lot of crying, a little bit of isolating herself, sitting on the porch.
David says things got so painful for Lindley that she left the farm and moved in with her dad. David continued to live and work on the property. One day, he found what seemed like an important clue.
I found a shell casing at one point while cleaning some of the caging.
Did that just creep you out, finding that?
Yes. I mean, anything to do with it gave me an uneasy feeling most of the time. It was surprising, and there was a part of me that was kind of excited, like, you know, what if this is something? The case had got quiet, you know, nobody was really talking too much about it anymore. Finding that, again, was kind of exciting to me because I was like, what if?
David turned over the shell casing to police and waited for something to happen. But his excitement about the discovery faded as weeks passed.
Did you start to think this would never be solved as the months go by?
There were some points there where it got scary. There were months where it never even came up in conversation. So, you know, there was always that fear that, you know, nothing could ever come out of it.
You're on this property and the killer is still out there.
The property was terrifying.
Babette didn't spend much time at the property, but she did keep in touch with Lindley.
We would meet up and talk, and she'd come by, and, you know, we kept in real close contact, and then it was kind of like she started fading away and harder to get a hold of.
Is Lindley kind of withdrawing?
Yeah.
From you, just seeing her less and less, hearing from
her?
Yeah,
she wasn't answering our calls and stuff, and, you know, it was frustrating.
Sam was also frustrated.
We tried to communicate with Lindley for quite some time. However, we to no avail. And it was disconcerting that she would isolate herself and the children.
Was she really isolating herself? David noticed Lindley was with a new guy, a man named Brandon Blackwell. He lived close by and worked at a power plant.
He was introduced to me as a close friend. I think it was a couple months later, it became very apparent, or maybe soon after that, that there was a relationship there.
Did he seem like a nice guy?
He did seem like a very nice guy, very cordial, very polite.
David tried not to get involved in Lindley's dating life, but then, over a year after Ben's death, she stopped by to visit, and this happened.
She has some news,
yeah.
Some big news.
She had come by. I don't remember the exact month, but she was pregnant.
Is this feeling a little premature to you?
It was a surprise.
I think I found out through her friend. It was on her Facebook page.
What's the timing on that?
Well, it was awful soon.
Yeah.
And that surprised me. You know.
What are you thinking then?
She's moving forward. You know, she's a young woman, beautiful, attractive.
Babette figured Lindley had every right to move on with her life. Sam wasn't so sure.
Do you reach out to the police or talk to the police about Lindley having this relationship?
We made sure that they knew, but at that point in time, they knew a lot more than we knew.
More about Lindley's new life and her new man.
Coming up, does Lindley have reason to fear for her own life?
He began stalking her, texting her 150 times a day. His own mother called Lindley and said, "Get out, get out, get out. He's on his way to your house."
Police knew about Lindley's new boyfriend, Brandon Blackwell. In fact, a few months into their homicide investigation, they spoke to him.
Lindley and I have definitely formed like a very special connection, and she's the most amazing woman I've ever met.
Brandon had gushed about Lindley, but by the summer of 2019, not everyone in town was as fond of her. Ben's brother Sam couldn't shake a nagging feeling that Lindley was hiding something.
Finding out that she was in another relationship and publicly, so soon after the murder was a big red flag.
It wasn't just her new relationship that bothered Sam. It was the way Lindley was making an effort to erase Ben from her life. That included selling the beloved family farm, Sam says, without even telling him.
We were given notice that we had 30 days to leave.
That's how you found out you had to leave?
That's right. Moving was the toughest. She left all of my brother's belongings behind. She never returned to the property. She actually left all of his things there and abandoned them.
Are these, in your mind, parlaying into could she have had something to do with Ben's death?
That did cross our mind.
By now, even David, the friend she brought in to care for Ben's snakes, had become wary of Lindley. He felt betrayed when he discovered she was trying to sell Ben's prized anacondas, also without saying a word.
She essentially had asked a friend of mine in the hobby to sell them or help relocate them.
Without talking to you?
Without talking to me.
And which, you've been spending months for free taking care of the animals?
That definitely put me off.
Lindley wanted to sell the snakes to Ben's friend Megan.
I got really nervous with it. I was like, what do I do? I called Dave immediately, and he's like, just kind of go along with it and see where she takes it.
Megan had no intention of going through with the deal. And when she walked away, Lindley blamed David for interfering. He said she sent him a threatening text.
I just keyed in on like four words, and one was lawyer, there was a phone number, and you should be ashamed of yourself.
It was just so mean. Not the Lindley he thought he knew at all.
Are you starting to think that Lindley might be involved?
There was some suspicions, just based on conversations and some other things.
But Lindley's dad said there was nothing sinister about the way his daughter acted after Ben's murder. He believed she was just a widow trying to put her painful past behind her. She had no control over the sale of the farm, says Lindell. It was up to the trustee in charge of Ben's father's estate. And he says Lindley might have seemed distant to Ben's circle, but she was just trying to rebuild her life and raise her children.
Did you think she was trying to help the kids cope with the loss of their dad?
She was, but I was also. Them children had an emotional state of their own that had to have been taken care of.
Plus, Lindley was dealing with her own personal drama that summer. Her once perfect relationship with Brandon, the man she'd had a child with after Ben's death, had turned toxic.
I know she did come to our house a couple of times because she was afraid of Brandon.
Were you scared for Lindley?
Yeah. I was scared for myself also. He's a pretty good-sized guy, and he'd already threatened to kick my ass, so.
Had he been threatening Lindley?
Not when I was there personally, but to the best of my understanding, yes.
According to Lindley, Brandon didn't just threaten her. On one occasion, she told police he wouldn't let her and the children leave the house, and he put his hands on her. He was arrested for assault, and Lindley was granted an order of protection. But Brandon's attorney told us the assault never happened. He said Brandon never laid his hands on Lindley, nor did he threaten her dad. Brandon was released, and Lindley says he still wouldn't leave her alone. Connie Sullivan is an attorney Lindley hired after Brandon was accused of violating the terms of the court order.
He began truly stalking her, texting her 150 times a day. His own mother called the police, called Lindley and said, get out, get out, get out. He's on his way to your house. He says he's in your backyard. He says he's going to sleep in your driveway.
Lindley told Connie that Brandon terrorized her for weeks. He ended up going to jail for felony stalking, an allegation he denied.
There wasn't a snake in that facility more venomous than Brandon Blackwell, and he was controlling and determined to run her life.
The whole Brandon situation, dreadful as it sounds, didn't seem to have any connection to Ben Renick's murder. But when investigators heard about it, it gave them an idea. Brandon had been so taken with Lindley the first time they interviewed him, he hadn't offered much. But now that things had soured, they thought maybe he'd say more. Boy, were they right.
My information is out of the horse's mouth.
Okay. And by the horse, you mean Lindley? Or...
We'll get to that.
Okay.
In January 2020, Lindley Renick was emerging from a fresh trauma. Her boyfriend Brandon was in jail on charges of felony stalking.
Was there some relief with Lindley that he was behind bars?
Yeah, Lindley was in a very vulnerable spot, and he knew that.
But if Lindley thought her troubles with Brandon were over, she was wrong. He was about to detonate a major bomb in her life. He agreed to sit down with the investigators working the Ben Rennick case.
Brent.
Yes, sir.
Your dad gave me a call today and said that you wanted to talk to us.
Yeah.
Brandon told the investigators the very thing they were hoping to hear, that he had vital information about the case. Brandon felt Lindley had blown their disputes out of proportion and was making up lies about him.
She's got him convinced that I'm this evil, savage human, and I'm the farthest thing from that.
The investigators promised to work with him if he helped them solve the case they'd been working for years, Ben's murder.
My information is out of the horse's mouth.
Okay.
The whole situation.
Brandon says as their relationship progressed, he wondered if Lindley knew more about Ben's death than she was saying.
I just had a really odd, strange feeling about it, and just little stories weren't right, and so, yeah, I kind of kept poking her about it, and, you know, it was like, just laid out, like, you know, if it's going to go anywhere, you know, I need to know what really happened.
He said Lindley eventually agreed to talk. They were in a cabin on vacation. She put their cell phones in another room.
She was just paranoid, you know, just thought you guys were listening in on it, you know, and just not, you know, you watch on TV.
Yeah.
It's real and what's not, so.
Brandon already knew that Lindley and Ben's marriage had been far from perfect. As it turns out, Ben was still alive when Brandon and Lindley first hooked up. She'd been cheating. She told Brandon the marriage was all but over.
Ben was getting to the point where he was going to leave her. She was sucking money out of him for her business, and their just relationship wasn't going well.
What he said next was an explosive allegation. Brandon told investigators Lindley was so worried Ben would take the kids from her, she decided to do something drastic. She hatched a plot to kill him. Yes, according to Brandon, Lindley was Ben's killer. And now, sitting in jail, accused of stalking, he said he was done keeping her secrets.
Whatever she ended up, I could get to at this point.
Yeah.
What she's put me through.
And there was more to the story, a lot more. He said Lindley didn't do it alone. She roped in an old boyfriend, someone she dated before marrying Ben. He worked odd jobs and had a history with drugs. His name was Michael Humphrey.
How did she get Michael to get on board with this?
She said that she just knew, based on his past and other things, that it's probably not too far from stuff he's been involved in before, and the way their relationship ended and whatnot, that he kind of owed her that.
Owed Lindley, Brandon said, because Michael had gotten her hooked on painkillers.
She didn't mention paying him to do it or anything like that? You think maybe?
As far as I know, there was no money involved.
On the day of the murder, he told investigators Michael picked Lindley up at her spa, and together they drove out to the farm. And then it was Lindley who grabbed the gun and marched into the facility.
Ben's in there, you know, cleaning whatever up against that back wall, and she walks in with the gun, and Ben's like, "What the f*** are you doing?" And she just shoots him a bunch of times and leaves.
Did she ever break down when she was telling the story, or just non-emotional, like?
Pretty non-emotional, yeah. It wasn't like a remorseful, like,
almost like he deserved it and he made her do it type deal.
Yeah, I mean, she just snaps in her head, like, and makes up her mind, like.
Lindley may not have been remorseful, but Brandon said he was. That living with a secret like that for more than 2 years hadn't been easy.
You know, ever since I found this stuff out, it's been in my head every day. Just, you know, as a man and a human that values things, what should I do? And it's been hard, and
why do you think she told you? Like, I know you said because you were asking, but why do you think she trusted you to tell you?
I guess, I don't know. I just came off as trustworthy. You know, she just thought she could get away with, or, you know, and I think just the way I presented it to her, like, that I wasn't gonna, and didn't for a long time, you know, let it bother me like it should.
Turns out what Brandon was saying made a lot of sense to the investigators. Unbeknownst to the public, they'd been looking hard at Lindley for a long time.
And if Lindley had anything to do with this, I want her sitting in that seat. So
that's where she deserves to be.
They got a warrant, and 3 days later, Lindley and her old boyfriend Michael were arrested and charged with Ben's murder. For Ben's brother Sam, the news was a long time coming.
How do you get word that Lindley has been arrested?
They let me know the morning of that it was going to happen. And it was a huge relief knowing that there was going to be finally be some justice.
And I was like, oh my God, I just broke down. It can't be real. This is real. It just shook our world.
Lindley's family and friends thought her arrest was all wrong. They were quite certain she was innocent and that not a shred of Brandon's story was true.
Do you believe Brandon Blackwell is a liar?
Without a doubt, he's definitely a liar.
Coming up.
You believe Brandon going to the police with this accusation about Lindley was all an act of revenge?
Revenge, and in order to get a deal and get out of jail.
Lindley Renick was under arrest, charged with the murder of her husband, Ben. Her father couldn't believe it.
Well, I thought, this is crazy. This can't be happening. Just, you know, I knew it wasn't true.
How did you find out?
She called me up, said, Dad, they're arresting me. Come and get the grandkids.
Lyndall Gallatin says the daughter he raised could never have killed anyone, never mind the man her two eldest children called Dad.
The children are her life. She would do anything to protect them kids and to take care of them. That was what she lived for.
He says she's a soft-hearted person who always made a habit of following the rules.
She bumped into another car, a van. Well, she immediately called the police to report it. The people in the other van said, no, we don't need to do this. You didn't do any harm. There's no damages. But she called anyways because she knew that was the right thing to do.
And it wasn't just Lindley's loved ones who felt the police had it wrong. EMT Dee Wassman, who'd been at the scene the day Ben was killed, didn't buy it either.
When I found out that Lindley had been arrested, I called her defense attorney and told them I did not think Lindley was guilty and that if I could help in any way, to please contact me.
Remember, Dee is the person who told Lindley that Ben was dead.
You're basing this on your experience with her at the scene.
Yes.
And what was it about her that day that you felt compelled all that time later to make that phone call?
She was genuine. There was something about her that I just could never get out of my head. It still hangs with me.
Dusty Brashler was also in Lindley's camp. She's an investigator for the Missouri State Public Defender's Office. She met Lindley for the first time in the county jail.
What's your first impression of Lindley?
I mean, I was like, her? I mean, I've met with a lot of people accused of a lot of different crimes, and it felt off, it felt wrong.
To Dusty, Lindley was an unusually straightforward client.
I would ask questions, she would answer them, she never held back, she was an open book. It was easy to get information out of her.
As Dusty dug into this case, she came to believe that Brandon was an angry ex-boyfriend who hoped to get out of jail, whatever it took.
We requested his phone calls, his jail phone calls. The whole time he's saying, I'm gonna make some journalist's career. I'm gonna f*** up Lindley's life, excuse my language, but he said he's going to ruin her.
Lindley's defense provided dozens of those calls to Dateline. While many are mundane, some make no bones about how Brandon felt about Lindley.
No, she's gonna be sitting in prison and that baby's gonna be mine. This is what's gonna happen. I'll try to burn that bitch. I mean, that's about all I know to do.
He's just mad at the world, saying he's going to screw her life up.
I don't want to watch Lindley's ass melt up there on the stand.
Dusty said the call suggests that Brandon would have said anything to get out.
Get the f*** out of this mess. Good, bad, ugly.
Connie Sullivan, the attorney who Lindley hired to guide her through her stalking case with Brandon, agrees.
You believe Brandon going to the police with this accusation about Lindley was all an act of revenge?
Revenge, and in order to get a deal and get out of jail. He'd just been told he was going to be held there without bond until his trial date, which could easily have been 6 months away.
Connie says Brandon had been threatening to point the finger at Lindley for some time. Lindley even documented it when she applied for her orders of protection against Brandon.
When their relationship ended, 2 years to the day after Ben's death, he threatened that if she took his child to go to the police and tell them that she'd murdered Ben. She was very open about that from the beginning. She made numerous police reports, all stating that that was one of his threats. and she testified to it under oath in front of two different judges.
Brandon's attorney says he never stalked Lindley and was talking to police because he was upset about sitting in jail for something he didn't do. But if Lindley had really committed murder, Connie says, wouldn't she have scrapped the stalking case against Brandon to keep him quiet? Connie thinks the investigators bought Brandon's story way too quickly.
I must say that they just swallowed it all hook, line, and sinker. They didn't investigate his motive to lie. They didn't listen to his jail phone calls.
The Missouri State Highway Patrol said at this time they can't comment on the case. Connie feels they should never have charged Lindley in the first place.
I was an assistant prosecutor for 10 years. I like to think I have a certain amount of being able to tell Lindley is not a murderer.
What is it about Lindley? Why do you have a soft spot for her?
You know, there's sometimes you meet somebody and you just click. Lindley was that kind of warm, open person. We hit it off, and she never lied to me.
So what do you say to anyone who says she's playing you?
That's what they think, and I understand why they think that, but it's not true.
What do you say to anyone who says this woman is clearly a cold-hearted snake, and this is all a bunch of you-know-what?
I mean, I say you're entitled to your opinion, but, you know, I'm in deep in this case, and I'm not comfortable saying that about someone unless it's been proven.
All right, please.
Prosecutors were ready to take their best shot at that, and they would tell the jury a very different story about Lindley, one about a devious, conniving woman who tried to kill her husband not once, but twice. On December 6, 2021, Lindley Rennick went on trial for Ben's murder. His brother Sam had been waiting for this day for years.
We were definitely ready for this, and we needed to seek justice for Ben. We needed to see it through.
But what Sam was not prepared to hear was how diabolical the crime actually was. The prosecutor said Lindley didn't just pull her old boyfriend into the plot to murder Ben. She roped in the manager of her spa, too. Seen here in this promotional video for the business.
Hi, Ashley. I'm the spa manager.
Ashley Shaw was the state's star witness. She was an employee of Lindley's who was given immunity for her cooperation.
And you did ultimately participate in attempting to kill Ben Rennick yourself, did you not?
I did.
Ashley said that leading up to the murder, Lindley had been confiding in her about troubles with Ben, fighting, emotional abuse. She says Lindley even said one day he sexually assaulted her while she slept.
When she told you this, what was your reaction?
I was shocked and felt sorry for her, kind of hurt for her, I guess.
She said Lindley told her she had to get away from Ben, but if she divorced him, he had the money and resources to take away her kids.
She didn't really think of any other option, and that she asked if I could help her with murdering him.
She regrets it now, but Ashley said she agreed to help.
Why would you help your boss try to kill her husband?
I think I felt sorry for her. It was a surreal situation, so it's kind of hard to explain what I was feeling at the time.
According to Ashley, shooting Ben wasn't Lindley's original plan for murdering him. She said first, Lindley tried to poison him with pills. About a week before Ben's murder, Ashley said she got a handful of prescription painkillers and gave them to Lindley, who then mixed them into Ben's protein shake.
She called me and said that he was very sick all night, threw up, but he was still alive.
Ashley said after that plan failed, she and Lindley tracked down Lindley's old boyfriend, Michael. Then, Michael and Lindley headed out to the farm to confront Ben.
Do you recall about what time of day it was that she left the spa?
It was afternoon, 2 to 3, somewhere around that time frame.
Ashley also said Lindley asked her to provide an alibi. She said Lindley had intentionally left her phone at the spa. So while Michael and Lindley were on their way to the farm, Ashley used Lindley's Facebook account to send Ben a message.
Just said, I'm not feeling well, I'm going to lay down, I think is what it said. Can you pick the kids up from school?
Ashley didn't know exactly how the shooting happened at the farm. When Lindley and Michael returned to the spa, she said Lindley made a beeline for the shower.
She asked me to scrub her body and her hands really well, and she washed her whole body.
She said Lindley initially told her that Michael had been the shooter, but later admitted she was the one who'd shot Ben.
She said that Michael got too nervous or didn't want to do it, and so he handed her the gun and she actually killed him.
And Ashley wasn't the only SPA employee from that video who said she knew about the murder before it happened.
I'm Rachel, I'm one of the estheticians here.
Employee Rachel Hunt told the jury Lindley had confided details to her as well.
What did she tell you?
Her and Michael Humphreys, Lindley and Michael Humphreys, were going to take a gun and go see Ben, and they said they were going to murder him.
Could these ladies have stopped this murder from the SPA?
They could have. Anyone could have stopped this murder by calling 911, but they did not.
To tell the jury what actually happened at the farm, the prosecution called their surprise witness.
Call your next witness. Michael Humphrey.
Michael Humphrey. Michael and Lindley had been arrested for the murder at the same time, but now Michael was going to point the finger directly at Lindley. In his orange uniform, he told the jury he hadn't seen her in 6 or 7 years when she showed up at his house and asked him to help kill Ben.
Initially, I thought she was just exaggerating some, you know.
Did you respond?
I told them that was crazy.
But then he said he ended up going with Lindley to the farm anyway. He said she told him she'd changed her mind about the murder and just needed support while she collected her things.
Why would you help her in this manner?
I thought that was going to be a peaceful resolution.
According to Michael, he picked Lindley up after 2 p.m. on June 8th. A charge on her card showed they got gas on the way to the farm. When they arrived, he said Lindley told Ben a cover story about Michael being a high school friend who wanted to see his snakes.
What is his reaction? Or can you see what his reaction is?
He was just, I guess, momentarily hesitant as to, you know, just randomly showing up there, but was like, fine, that's fine, come on in.
Michael said he had just walked inside when he heard the first shot.
I was looking at a whole lot of snakes, and then I heard a shot come out, which inside there was extremely loud, so I kind of ducked a little bit. I looked down through there, and she was at the end of the corridor posed up like this with the gun.
He said he ducked out the door as Lindley continued to fire shots into Ben.
She comes out the door. I'm still standing there. She runs around to the passenger side of the car and starts screaming at me to drive, basically.
The prosecutor said remarkably Lindley hadn't promised Michael a dime for his help with the murder. She hadn't offered Ashley or Rachel anything either. The prosecutor also told the jury that before the murder, Lindley was cheating not only with Brandon, but with this man who was in charge of advertising the spa.
When did your relationship become sexual, if you recall?
Around December of 2016, something like that.
With all this testimony about Lindley's deceptions and so many firsthand accounts of her role in the murder, the case against her looked formidable. But defense attorneys Tim Hessman and Catherine Berger said all was not what it seemed.
Right off the bat, I sort of said to myself, this is all witnesses. There's no DNA, there's no fingerprints.
No gunshot residue either. Lindley's hands had been tested after the murder and they were clean. They said the state's theory of motive just wasn't true.
It's been said that Lindley was afraid because Ben had all the money that he would be able to put up a big fight for the kids and that she could lose out.
That I don't think ever entered Lindley's mind. She said, no. My mom was a social worker. I know how this works. It takes a lot for courts to be willing to take kids away from their parents when those parents love them and are competent caretakers.
The defense said the whole case against Lindley was based on the words of three people who had very good reasons to lie. They thought the police leaned on Ashley in particular.
Here is a woman that is inside of an interrogation room with no attorney, who's 29 years old, and is told expressly, if you continue to help Lindley Renick and you do not help us, you're not going to leave this room. Now, who in that situation would not tell the police anything they wanted to hear?
And Michael, who'd already been tried and convicted for Ben's murder months earlier, was getting a reduced sentence for his testimony. Instead of life without parole, he now has a chance to get out.
But so, you're eligible for parole, right?
Hopefully we'll not die in there.
But how would they explain Lindley's gas station stop shortly before the murder? Or Ashley's phony Facebook message to Ben?
Hey,
The defense said that the truth was that Lindley did know more about the murder than she'd told police, that she'd lied to them, but they said she had not killed her husband. Lindley was about to tell that story to the jury herself.
Coming up.
Michael turned around, and I saw a gun in his hands, and then I heard shots.
Lindley testifies that Michael killed Ben. Will it convince the jury?
I think that she put on a heck of a show up there.
And then Lindley sits down to face our questions.
Lindley Renick had a lot to answer for. The prosecutor said she'd had affairs, lied to the police, and shot her husband 8 times. So the courtroom was buzzing when Lindley took the stand.
Can you please introduce yourself to the jury?
Hey, I'm Lindley Renick.
In her soft voice, Lindley admitted that yes, she'd gone to the farm with Michael the afternoon Ben was killed. But her intention wasn't to end his life. It was to end their marriage.
Why were you really there?
To ask Ben for a divorce.
You weren't going to kill Ben?
No.
She said there was never any murder plot. Her marriage to Ben was in shambles and she'd been involved with other men. She wasn't proud of that.
Do you regret it?
Yes.
And she said she did not want Ben dead. She claimed the poisoning story wasn't true, that she and Ben both drank a bad protein shake a week before the murder.
Did you get sick?
Yes.
Lindley also said she'd only asked Michael to come with her to the farm because she was afraid of how Ben might react. And she said she was absolutely floored when Michael pulled out a gun. Lindley's testimony was that he was the one responsible for Ben's death.
Michael turned around, and I saw a gun in his hands, and then I heard shots ring out, and I screamed, and I ran outside. And then I heard more shots go off, and everything just went numb.
She said she was in total shock and denial as they drove back to the spa.
I mean, I didn't know what had happened. That wasn't even a thought that was in my mind at that point, that Ben was dead or could be dead.
Lindley said it was only later, when she got a call from her kid's school, that she realized Ben might really be hurt.
Is this when that, for lack of a better word, fantasy that nothing had happened started to crack for you?
Yes. I just started to panic because Ben wouldn't not pick the kids up.
But to the prosecutor, Lindley's story sounded preposterous.
If you're willing to lie to the police about such a vital matter, why should these jurors now believe you?
I was lying to protect myself, and I told a lot of really awful lies just to do that. All I can do now is just sit up here and tell the truth.
Plus, she said Michael threatened her so she'd keep her mouth shut. Her dad says she had good reason to be afraid.
This was not a threat. This was a promise.
You feel like he could kill her?
Oh, I feel like he would, definitely, most definitely.
When it came time to deliberate, Lindley's defense team knew the jurors had options. First-degree murder could mean life in prison for Lindley, whereas a conviction for second-degree murder could mean she'd be out in as few as 10 years. The jury deliberated for almost 12 hours, then sent the judge a message. A verdict had been reached.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Lindley Renick, guilty of murder in the second degree.
What was her reaction in court?
She just shocked. She crumbled.
Next, the jury gave the judge a recommendation for sentencing. The judge accepted it. Lindley got 13 years for the murder, plus 3 on a related charge, for a total of 16 years behind bars. Her dad was despondent.
With the health problems I got, I don't know whether I'll be alive when she gets out.
But Ben's loved ones thought the sentence wasn't nearly enough.
It seems like in the state of Missouri, a life is worth 13 years at best.
We were hoping for first-degree murder.
Why do you think she didn't get first-degree murder?
I think that she put on a heck of a show.
Lindley says she wasn't putting on a show, not on the stand, or to us, when we visited her at this maximum security women's prison north of St. Louis. We wanted to hear her story firsthand. She told us she had no motive whatsoever to want Ben dead.
out of everybody here, I had the most to lose.
Why did you have the most to lose?
I mean, I lost everything with Ben dying.
Lindley said she went to the farm to ask Ben for a divorce, but messages she sent him earlier that day didn't seem like they came from an unhappy wife.
Why did you send Ben nude photos that day if you were planning on going there to talk to him about separating?
I don't have a very healthy relationship with sex or my body, and it is very much a way, and in that moment was a way to put Ben in a good mood and make him happy.
How would that continue to make him happy?
It wouldn't continue to make him happy, but you've never tried to soften the blow?
Not like that, no.
Okay.
We also wondered why she felt she needed to bring someone with her to the farm.
Why did you bring Michael with you?
Since Ben and I's marriage was kind of falling apart and everything had kind of started escalating with him being a little bit more controlling and physical, Ashley had told me that she wanted me to have somebody that would be there with me and so that nothing would get out of hand.
But then why would Michael shoot Ben?
I don't know. Somebody told me they thought that maybe Michael was high and maybe Ben said something cross to him. I don't know.
You're the common denominator here between Michael and Ben. You brought Michael to the snake facility that day.
Not to kill him, though.
Did you ask him? Why did you kill him?
No.
It just seems to me like you would want to know why, or that there was a reason.
Have you ever experienced any sort of trauma that just absolutely unearthed every part of the life that you have to where you don't know the ground that you stand on or the air that you breathe?
Did you
have you ever experienced that? Because if you haven't,
look,
I don't know.
Okay.
If you haven't, I don't know that anybody would understand.
Why didn't you call 911? Why didn't you run in to help him?
I ran away. I mean, I heard gunshots and I ran away. I honestly don't know anybody who hears gunshots and runs to it.
Michael, of course, is already serving a life sentence for his role in the murder.
Did you kill Ben?
I did not kill Ben.
Did you have Michael kill Ben for you?
I did not have Michael kill Ben. I never wanted Ben dead.
We also pointed out that four people implicated her in the plot.
Are you saying that all four people in this case were lying then? Michael, Brandon, Ashley, Rachel, all telling lies?
Yes.
And what do you say to anyone who says, you know, it's kind of hard to believe that all four people would be lying? Some don't even know each other.
I can see how that would be hard, and you know, but having walked through it and lived it and seeing the motives and threats and intentions behind everyone, I don't think it's that hard.
And then there was the matter of Sam. Why had she pointed the finger at him if she knew for a fact that he was innocent?
I mean, when I tell you everybody around me, even people that I didn't know, were sending me messages saying that Sam did it, and I just...
But you knew he didn't.
I didn't make the right choice. I can't take that back, and that was just a really ugly thing to do.
But you do feel bad about it?
I feel awful.
Ben's family and friends say the reality is that a snake didn't kill him, but a cold-hearted snake killed him, and that cold-hearted snake is you.
Oh, I'm aware. I don't have any response or reply to that, and it doesn't change my conscience in knowing that I didn't kill Ben and I never wanted him dead.
Lindley's eldest son and the daughter she had with Ben are being raised by her family. Brandon is raising the son he had with Lindley. All charges against him, including felony stalking, were dropped after Lindley's conviction. And Sam? He has no parents to lean on and no family farm to go home to. It's in the hands of new owners. Still, Sam is resilient. He's made a home of his own.
You have had a life of tragedy.
There's been a lot of tragedy, yes. It is what it is. You know, we've been through a lot, but I'm here. We made it, and we have to move forward.
That's all for now. I'm Lester Holt. Thanks for joining us.